Okay, that is our cue to start the show. And oh my goodness, we are in our brand new studio in the Drakeford Library in Carrboro. And I'm using the brand new soundboard and the sound. This is like a really interesting sound. Like the microphone is picking up a lot more. Okay, well, listeners, for our returning listeners, I wonder how it sounds to you. It sounds a lot more like studio and bigger. And anyway, let's get this show started. I am so happy. Welcome to the Aging Well Together show. We have been not able to do live programs for over a month now. And so we've been doing Zoom programs. And so you've still been able to enjoy Aging Well Together. But we are in the studio and we have such a fantastic show today as we have a returning guest, the compassionate and thought-provoking Kim Wright is back with us. She is an attorney who specializes in holistic and integrative estate planning. But on the last show, which was show 67, episode 67, and this is episode 77. So, Kim, it's been 10 shows since you've been with us. You were with us the end of January. And I highly recommend another listen to that show. So, folks, after you hear this, go back on the website, Orange County. OrangeCountyNC.gov/aging. I'll talk about that in a moment. And it's episode 67. It was so great. And Kim, we learned that not only is she an attorney that specializes in holistic and integrative estate planning, but she talked about how she's also an author and a speaker and a digital nomad. And she's one of the first social media influencers, one of the first legal social media influencers back in like 2007, 2010. She was the first who made a ton of YouTube videos about legal issues, and we just couldn't get enough of her. So we are thrilled she has agreed to come back to talk about her books and her talks and things she's been really active with lately, and especially about her new books and revised books, Lawyers as Peacemakers and Changemakers. She's nodding to me. So anyway, we have so much to get into. I am so excited for all we will learn together. But as always, before we dive into our show, we need to give a shout out to WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carrboro for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. And especially now in this new studio, and it's going to take me a little while to get used to this new sound. And also, this is a windowed, our old studio was windowed, but this one has windows too, and people are passing by, like someone just came out and is smiling at us, and so we're gonna have fun. We need to have like an literally on the street and wave to passersby. But anyway, so excited. Thank you, WCOM, for giving us this fancy, bougie new studio. They host our weekly Aging Well Together show. You can catch our show every Thursday from 2 to 3 on 103.5 FM or stream us live through WCOMFM.org. The Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the always helpful team at the Orange County Department on Aging. Besides being our wonderful sponsors and providing expert guests on our show, each week, Marilyn over at the Orange County Department on Aging puts all of our shows up on their website. So if you want to catch any of our past shows, we're super hip. Not only do we have a radio show, these are podcasts, I guess we can call them. So you can see our past shows, and you can also find a range of local Orange County aging resources. So you want to go to the Orange County Department on Aging's website. I said it messy before, but it is www.orangecountync.gov/aging. And if you have any questions about local resources, you can also call the Orange County Department on Aging at 919-968-2070. And if you have any questions about our shows or want to suggest a topic or person or organization, go ahead and drop me an email. And you can email me at, it's all one smushed word, AgingWellTogetherShow@gmail.com. AgingWellTogetherShow@gmail.com. A shout out to the Carrboro bass band, the Robert Bradford Quartet. Actually, now they are the Robert Bradford Quintet. Officially, they sometimes had a fifth person, and now they officially have a fifth person. The Robert Bradford Quintet gave us their great original music, Mayfly, and that's our opening music, and you'll hear a lot more of it at the end of the show. My fabulous co-host, Alicia, is back with us. Alicia, it's our first show in our new bougie studio.
No, I haven't.
The sound... I know. Wait, we've... Oh, wait. I didn't put your mic on.
Mic check.
Mic check. Hey. There. Hey, welcome back.
Wow, I'm excited.
I know.
We look fancy.
We do look fancy.
It's our voices change.
It does. This is like a this is a different sound. I have to get used to it. And by the way, my chair is different. And I realize I'm going to be like, I didn't fix it beforehand. So I'm going to be all squirmy squirm. Anyway, Alicia's.
Welcome.
Yeah, welcome. Alicia's back with us. She is an extraordinary wellness instructor with the Orange County Department on Aging, a dedicated community volunteer. And she is also host of Afternoon Talk with Alicia, which comes on right after our show. Will this be your first show?
Here, yes.
Yeah.
What number is this show for?
77.
77. Okay, I had 76. 77. Sunset Strip.
I know. And last time it was exciting because it was 67. And Kim, you shared that was important to you because...
I am 67.
I know. You had offered that. You're like, I love this. I was like, wait, have you had a birthday since we've seen you in the last few months? All right, we got to get all into Kim really quickly. As for me, I'm Heather Altman. I've spent over 25 years working in aging services and supports. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community. I'm a caregiver for older family members, and at 54, I am focusing on my own aging needs. And so I'm excited and super invested in how we are all aging well together. Now that we're in our new studio, maybe I should change up our opening spiel a little bit. I'll think about that. I keep thinking about it, but I kind of like how it flows. All right.
I like it. And but the studio just brings on this...
It's just a different vibe.
Yeah, it is.
But you see, they have the superhero action figures.
Weren't here before.
Listeners, you need to come by the Drakeford Library and then pass by WCOM Studio. And right at the window, we have a whole series of action figures that are looking outside.
I gotta put some femininity in this.
Well, it's just they're doing okay. They're, you know, it's not as man.
She-Ra, the lawyer.
Oh, here we go.
It's not as man cave.
Man cave as the previous studio was.
It was.
I don't want to sound disrespectful. There's a lot less dust. It's a lot cleaner in here now. All right. I am so excited. We, as we shared last time that Kim was on, Kim Wright is not your typical lawyer. For more than 30 years, she has focused on holistic and integrative law, bringing a more human and humane approach to law. She is the author and editor of, it was three books published by the American Bar Association, and she's going to tell us more about her new books. She's also a contributor to a dozen other books. She is the co-founder of the Conscious Contracts Process. And again, you got to go back to episode 67. She really did a deep dive into that. She has that is a relational approach that enhances and deepens relationships between partners. She was a pioneer in peacemaking approach to divorce. For 15 years, she was a global nomad. She's going to tell us about how she traveled all around the world and weaved together a network of integrative lawyers. And in 2023, she came back to us in North Carolina and settled down. And her law practice supports clients in aligning their legal documents with what matters most to them. I'm so excited to have you back here. Welcome back, Kim.
Thank you for having me back.
Yay.
Woo-hoo. And I'm really honored to be the first one in the new studio.
I know. This is so fun.
Snazzy.
Yeah. What's interesting, though, Alicia, Kim is so cool. This is not her. This is her first show with us in the new studio, but it's not her first show in the studio.
Oh, you've been here with someone else.
I was at Home Power Hour yesterday.
Oh.
So she was already a guest yesterday on Home Power Hour.
Wow.
So she is a local celebrity coming on, a WCOM returning guest for everyone. But we're honored to have you here.
Definitely.
Before, we got so much to get into about your books and your work, but do a reminder about you and how you became a digital nomad and traveling around the world. So whatever you want to share that kind of brings us to our your new and improved books. You have a new and improved book and you have a new book. So take it away.
So I don't remember what I talked about before. So if I start repeating myself, Heather.
Well, that's okay. It's good to hear it.
Correct me.
You gave the history of your kind of going back and forth in law. Start again a little bit because it's so interesting. It begs repeating.
So when I went to law school, I went because I had a big family, and they often, there's a person with purple hair.
Hi, person with purple hair, and hi, person.
I like it. You're
going to have constant, this is not good for my ADHD. Like, there's so much stimulus happening.
So much stimulus. when I was... I had a big family, And they were complicated and messy. And I became interested in going to law school because we kept having to hire lawyers.
You know what we're going to do? We're going to do a quick programming note, and we're going to give you this other microphone. It seems to kind of be going in and out a little bit. Alicia, is that what you were saying? Alicia was giving me looks. And then Alicia, take that one. We have so many microphones to play.
Is this better?
Yeah, that is better.
Okay. So I was mothering 7 children, running a business, and spending money on lawyers was not something I wanted to do. And, you know, like, I'm a do-it-yourself kind of person anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to go to law school. I had no idea what I was doing.
I love that. I want to pay for lawyers. Yeah. I'm just going to become a lawyer.
Yeah,
that's brilliant.
With 7 children. And 7 kids and a business.
Yeah, and when we know from the other show, it doesn't stay 7 children. A lot more come in.
But a lot more come in.
Keep going.
So when I went to law school, I didn't really have in mind that I was going to work as a lawyer anywhere else. You know, it was like my family was going to be enough to keep me busy. And I'm one of those people, I do a lot. I mean, you know, like 7 kids and a business wasn't enough. I actually started 2 organizations in law school, became a guardian ad litem, representing children in the court system. I actually started working with abused and neglected children,
mm-hmm.
And then they moved me into divorce, and so I started that pilot program with them. And so, you know, like I'm doing stuff.
Yeah.
So these guys came to me and said, "We think you're doing too much."
I remember that story.
And you let
that sink in, Kim.
I decided that I wasn't going to be a lawyer.
Just because of this harsh comment, because we talked about that a last time, and so I remember you let this harsh comment say, "I don't want to play in this sandbox."
I don't want to be, you know, like they're jerks.
Right.
They're jerks. I don't want to do that. And so I became, I ran a domestic violence program. Like I did law adjacent things. And so then I moved to North Carolina. Kids were coming and going mm-hmm. at that point. And I decided, to do other things. But every time I went for an interview, I would say, "I'm not a lawyer by choice."
Oh.
and that didn't go well.
Non-consensual lawyer.
Yeah, that didn't go well.
Like, I'm not going to practice. You know, like, well, what's wrong with you? Did you pass the bar? Oh, yeah, I passed 2 bar exams by that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in a course, and this guy stood up, and he started talking about the way he practiced law. And he talked about dignity, and he talked about being a divorce lawyer who actually liked to make sure people were still friends.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, everything went from black and white to color, and, you know, birds sang and butterflies mm-hmm. came out and all that. And I decided I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I actually took the North Carolina bar, became a lawyer in North Carolina. I was living in Chapel Hill. My daughter loved Chapel Hill High, but I had colleagues in Burlington who asked me to come over and practice with them. So I became a 2-city person.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Chapel Hill, and I practiced actually in Graham.
Mm-hmm.
And what I discovered was that lawyers really were often jerks, but not necessarily. It was like the thing that was
different. Sorry, lawyer friends.
The thing that was different is that I saw that the system was designed to encourage jerkiness.
Yeah, the adversarial nature, the winners and loser nature.
There had to be a winner and there had to be a loser and, you know, domination and, you know, all of those things. And there wasn't a lot of dignity and there wasn't a lot of looking for people to be friends. And so, but I knew that it was possible. So I, at that point, became an advocate for what was possible and started experimenting with all sorts of things. And so over the years, I did that. And to become a digital nomad, to get to that story is I became known.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was, you know, like, we did not have internet in the way we have it now in the 90s.
You became the first, as we talked about, one of the first influencers by accident, right? I started doing videos.
And I went to 15 conferences in 2007. And it kind of got in the way of making money. You know, like if you're at a conference, you're not actually making money at home.
Sure.
And so I decided that I would, I had to do something. You know, like if I had to pay a mortgage, I couldn't travel so much. So I decided I wouldn't pay a mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And I became a digital nomad.
Yes.
And but it did, you know, like I'm the person who does it before it has a name. Like it wasn't called digital nomad then.
Yeah. Well, it's the first time at the last show. This is the first time we'd ever heard that term. But I've heard nomadic.
Yeah.
But being a digital nomad.
Oh, it's a popular term now. There are lots of people who are becoming digital nomads. But they just called me homeless.
Yeah. Well, and unlike me, who would have enjoyed if I was going to nonstop conferences, which I enjoy doing, oh, great. And I was like, oh, so you just stayed in hotels everywhere. And oh, no, you did not. Mm-hmm. I know. And you didn't stay at friend's house that much. You did. There's a segue for you. I set you up.
I camped.
You camped.
I went in the first 2 years of being a nomad. I visited 25 national parks.
Oh.
And a lot of forests and other places.
For living.
I was traveling, so you know, from place to place. So I would, when I did an interview, it required a lot of presence.
Yes,
and they were hour long interviews, and with people who had a lot of deep thoughts, and they were mostly good friends of mine. And so I kind of got into this zone of being extremely present and connecting with them in a way that took a lot of energy. I could not do more than one a day. And so what I did after each interview was I went to the woods, basically.
Oh.
Slept on the ground, you know, what is it?
That introvert tree. Kind of re-energized through nature. I'm an extrovert, so I re-energize with other people, but okay.
Yeah, I'm on the fence.
Yes.
So I can be both.
I'm not sure if you should ever have a radio show here, because talk about being totally present with all these people passing by. And I was like, I am totally present on you, Kim, and yet I just know the person that just walked by. So then you would recharge in the woods, and so that was your solace, your comfort place.
And I was traveling with a guy who had actually been a wilderness skills teacher, a survival skills teacher.
We did not hear that last time. I thought you were alone. Okay, so you had like a good, companion there.
Yeah, he was a filmmaker, and we met, and he was looking for something to do. At the same time, I was looking for someone to do that. And so for the first 2 years, we traveled together. And so I actually became a certified wilderness.
Oh,
of course you did. You sound like Alicia. Alicia, she's you. She has so many different things that she's doing and interests. And, oh, my gosh, people think I wear a lot of hats. You too. All right, wilderness instructor, attorney, influencer, speaker, and then somewhere along the way you started writing books. Oh yeah, mom. Your mom. I'm assuming the kids were that group of kids were grown by that point.
My daughter left home. Let's see, in about 2002.
That makes sense because this was all around 2007, 2010, you were saying last time. Okay.
Yeah.
So you were able to kind of go off, be famous out in the woods. That sounds fun.
Well, see, I was just weird at that point.
Okay.
Like, people
it's
didn't.
Good to be weird.
Well, that's time.
Yeah. We like weird.
Yeah, people didn't.
You're in Carbo right now. We are welcome to Weird Central.
I lived a mile from here. So,
yeah.
You know, when I was, I said I lived in Chapel Hill. I lived sometimes in Chapel Hill, sometimes in Carborough. I was Weaver Street Market number, it was 33 or 43.
Oh, so you were one of the original founders. And then you decided to become an author on top of all these things, you got approached.
I got approached.
As I remember. Mm-hmm.
And so what happened was that I got about 50 interviews up on YouTube. Was brand new. This is how old I am, right? YouTube was brand new.
Or just a founder, or an innovator, or what's the word I'm looking for when someone's just
trailblazer?
A trailblazer. Love it. Thank you.
I actually have a thing I'll say real quickly. There are trailblazers, pioneers, and settlers.
Oh. Okay.
The trailblazers are the ones who go out with the machete and, like, there is no path.
Right.
You go out and
make it happen.
And then the pioneers see the path and take it. Mm-hmm. And then the settlers say, hey, that looks pretty good. I'm going to go and do
that's
that.
That's probably me. I'm probably a settler. I'm a little bit pioneer, but mostly, okay, go on.
And so, there was no path. But there were a lot of people who were talking about the same things. And so when I would go to these conferences, they would have conversations about, at that point, neuroscience was really like brand new hot topic. And appreciative inquiry, mm-hmm. Which is an organizational development tool for, you know, sort of focusing on the best of what's
yes.
happening. There things like empathy were like just being talked about, emotional intelligence. And so I was paying attention to all of those things before they were cool.
And were you doing that in the context of law? And so those are those are their own topics on their own, but were you already seeing the bridge between those new ways of thinking or new ways of talking about it and then how it might be used in a legal space at the time?
Is sure.
Yeah.
I considered my law practice to be a laboratory.
Got it.
To bring
Love
all
it.
Of those ideas in. And then I would find other people who were also interested. And so during that time, it was a very different time. We didn't have Zoom and mm-hmm. Skype. I don't think Skype was around yet.
No, and Skype just went down. I heard the other day they just sort of, yes, okay.
But I through phone and I guess I had email mm-hmm. in the early 90s.
Yes.
And so, and I had a website, but my first website, 100,000 people visited it the first year, and that was
wow.
bringing all those ideas together. And every time I heard of something cool, I just added it. My sister taught web design mm-hmm. At a community college, and so she taught me to design websites. And so I think I was the first legal website in North Carolina. There's somebody who claims that, but I had one before he claims to have done it.
Wow.
She did.
So you're a technological trailblazer on top of everything else. And
I was practicing and connecting with people. And as I connected with people, I started creating this network. So then I started Bridgeline, the conference line. Every Thursday at 4 o'clock, this is how knew that was. It cost $900 a year to have a bridge line.
I don't even, you didn't talk about that last time. I don't know what a bridge line is. So
it's a place.
Is that like a party line? Like people would call in?
Like people can call in and you can all be on the phone at the same time. Yeah, and so
like original conference calls, but like back in the day, they had party lines, like literally in the 80s and 90s. So that's okay. So, like, how many people could call in?
Up to 100.
Okay.
And so I started offering classes through I bought a bridge line for $900, so I had to use it, right? So every Thursday, I had a gathering that people could come and talk about anything. But then I also had classes.
Were they people, or were they attorney people?
Was mostly lawyers.
Lawyers looking to kind of have a collective and a collaborative to turn to. Okay.
So, for example,
like people are lawyer people.
You know, it's the only profession that actually distinguishes that there are lawyer people and there are people.
Oh, okay. There you go. All right. Well, then I wasn't wrong saying that. So then you started having a legal party line.
And so on Thursdays, we would call it like we'd have a speaker maybe for the first 15 minutes and then, so the different topics drew different people. So then like somebody, and literally this happened, somebody in San Diego said, I'm doing employment law in a holistic way. And somebody in Memphis said, I am too.
Oh, great. So you make those connections.
And so
the bridge,
people,
if you will.
Those people bridged.
Ah.
And then they started doing things together. And so, I'm actually very arachnophobic, but I'm like the mother spider.
I was like, I think she means spiders. Okay, go on. Oh, got it. I was thinking more like a hub and wheel and spoke model, but okay, do spider.
The thing about, I actually.
And that you created a web?
I used to use the hub and spoke model.
Yeah.
But then there were the lines in between, so it was more of a web.
I love it.
And so people would web together, and then eventually we had at first we said we thought we had 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
And because those were the people who went to conferences, mm-hmm. would see each other at conferences. Well, it actually turned out there were a lot more than 100 people. But in 2007, after going to all these conferences, I said, I'm just going to give up my house. I'm going to go interview these 100 people. And so I started in 2008 doing that. And when I had gotten to 50, first of all, I knew that there were a whole lot more than, you know, because as I interviewed people, especially put them out on YouTube, then people would say, well, I know this person. You got to meet that person. Mm-hmm. Like today I got a news article in my feed about a holistic personal injury lawyer who's talking about like being an expert in trauma and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, like, oh, you know, there are these people out there. They have no idea there's a movement. Mm-hmm. They're just
They're kind of weird and doing something different on their own. But yeah. then yeah. there's a whole community.
And so I started reaching out to all those people and they started reaching out to me. And we and one of those people mentioned me to the American Bar Association, and they looked at my YouTube channel, which at that point had 50 people, mm-hmm. and said, wow.
Yeah.
And I remember so well, she said, her name was Erin. She doesn't work there anymore, but she said, we knew that law was headed in this direction. We could see the trends, but we had no idea it had gone so far. And would you write a book about this?
Great.
And so that's how I went from being the weirdest lawyer in the world to mainstream, or the edge of fringe.
And that is the book. Is that the Lawyers as Peacemakers?
And that's Lawyers as Peacemakers, and it came out in 2010. And that's the one that I am revising. I got the rights back, and I thought that by the time I came back, I would surely have it done. I am 50 pages from having it ready.
Okay, because I remember January 30th, I was literally, there was like one copy left on Amazon. I was ready to click buy, and then you said, no, don't. I'm updating it. So
yeah, so I have been updating it, and you know,
50 pages left.
I've got 50 pages left to finish the edits, and like it's been edited once, but and then the formatting, because I had to reformat the whole thing.
And so, is the book a culmination of those like 50 different interviews and things you heard, or tell us about the book? Like, how is it? Since I did not buy a copy of it, how does it approach? Is the goal for other attorneys to read it and figure out their role in the peacemaking process, or is it for other people like Alicia and I who should to read it to understand what kind of lawyer we may be looking for, what kind of outcome?
I wrote it for lawyers, but a lot of people who are not lawyers have actually read it and told me that they appreciated it, because I'm a storyteller, and so it does have those people. You know, that you're talking about, you know, that, you know, I interviewed. Mm-hmm. It's got a little vignette for several of them that mm-hmm. are illustrations of their stories. And so that's like a sidebar. And then my story weaves in about how I discovered all of these different things in people. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little bit of a travelogue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's And it's stories, and it's also this explanation of how this movement evolved. So, you know, peacemaking, like Abraham Lincoln said, lawyers should be peacemakers. So that's not a new idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, mediation started coming around in the 80s, and lawyers became mediators, so they were becoming peacemakers. Mm-hmm. But there was not the sense of it being connected in any way. Mm-hmm. It was like these, you know, weird lawyers waking up one day and saying, I think I'll try something different.
Okay.
And so the book brought all that together to show that, you know, the patterns and the connections. And there's a model called collaborative law that was created by a lawyer named Stu Webb in Minnesota, who had been a mediator, and he'd been a holistic lawyer, and he studied psychology, so he was interdisciplinary already, and he was aware of like the solicitor barrister model in other places, mm-hmm. and he said, I think we really ought to. He said, first of all, he said, wrote a letter to the court, and he says, I'm never going to court again.
Wow. Okay.
He said he saw how much damage it did to the people. And even the lawyers, like, you know, there's actually a health crisis among lawyers who are, traumatized by this constant fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, what if we actually signed an agreement at the beginning that we're not going to court?
Well, isn't that kind of like the arbitration goal, or is that different? Because I know, yeah.
Arbitration is kind of this weird thing for me, because arbitration is still court. It's still you giving your power to someone else. So arbitration is, I'm going to take my case. I'm not going to the actual court. I'm going to hire somebody that maybe knows more about a particular area of law or something like that. And I'm going to call. I'm going to give them the chance to give me an answer of what I should do, rather than have to go through, you know, like mm-hmm. To go to the courthouse and, you know, wait for your hearing date and all that. It's more of like private court.
Okay.
Whereas mediation is, they actually put mediation and arbitration together in most courses.
Yeah.
Mediation is, Alicia and I are having a problem. We're going to ask Heather to help us mm-hmm. talk about this.
Well, you're both right. Let's go get some pizza. That's how I would handle it. But okay, go on.
And so Heather sits there and says, Alicia, tell me what's going on with you. Mm-hmm. And then ask questions. And then you say, you know, say, Kim, what's going on with you? And ask questions. And then so we're both listening to that. And then maybe say, well, Alicia, I heard you say this, and Kim said that too. So is that a place you agree? Can we start with this?
Yeah, it sounds like therapy.
A lot of therapists become mediators.
Got it. Yeah, that's what I would think that. Okay, yeah.
But lawyers have tried to become mediators from that adversarial model.
Yes. Let me listen to see who's really right or wrong.
And so, then I'm going to tell you.
Yes.
And that's where arbitration came from.
Mm. Got it.
The lawyer sitting there saying, oh, well, I know the answer to this one. Mm. But it takes the power away from people. Mm. And so in what we call integrative law, we're looking at giving the power back to the people and helping them gain the skills to resolve their own issues, rather than going to a therapist, or somebody in a robe who thinks they know your life better right. than you, mm-hmm. and they're going to listen to you for an hour and they're going to tell you, you know, like
yes.
the metaphor that I really love is this came from Greensboro. I don't know who the judge was, but he said he would tell people when they were coming in he would do a class for all the people who were going to get divorced, and he would say, now, imagine that you're going to buy a house mm-hmm. and you're going to let me choose it. And we're going to have this conversation for about, you know, an hour, maybe a day, about what kind of house you're looking for. And then I'm going to go and I'm going to choose that house for you. Now, in that, even if it's a week, in that time, I cannot really learn what it is that matters to you. It's impossible. You know, like I might go in and say, I really like that bathtub. Mm-hmm. You may hate bathtubs and want the huge shower, you know.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
And so in court, that's what happens. You give your problem to somebody else to solve.
Interesting analogy. And so you prefer the mediation where it might take a little bit longer, but it really...
It defines it a little more. You know, if that's the person... take control of it, and they get to hear it.
It's like with coaching and therapy, a lot of times the real progress is made when you just hear yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a different skill set for lawyers. It's not, you know, like that, you know, this is what the law says, mm-hmm. and therefore we're going to do it this way, is a different skill set than what do you really want? What's really important to you? Let's dig down mm-hmm. here and see, you know, what do you value and why?
So then, you use these different stories and approaches, because I'm going to the book because I want to then go to the next book. So I've got my agenda here with it. But so was it well received? So you kind of talk about all these different processes. I mean, I'm assuming it's well received because now 15 years later, you're doing a reboot.
Yeah, it actually was a bestseller while it was in pre-sales. And you know, like people know me now, you know, but, you know, more
yes.
people know me. Nobody knew me then. Just, you know, I had a big group of acquaintances. But for it to go immediately to the bestseller list, to me said that lawyers were wanting this.
Wanting it. And then have you heard, what inspired you or motivated you to say, what I wrote in 2010 needs a reboot?
One of the things that happened to me, so there are two different answers to that. One is about the next book.
And okay,
then the
good.
One is the
We've got time. Good. Yep.
So what happened with that book was that people were really excited about it. And like, I don't know, maybe 6 months after the book was out, I got a call or an email from Australia saying, would you sign this book? And we want to give it to one of our judges who's retiring as a gift. Huh. And so, you know, like they nice. Bought it, sent it to me. I, you know, shipped it back to them and all that. And it created a relationship with some folks in Australia who then said, would you like to come over here and do some talks? Okay. So that was my first invitation overseas. And, you know, like the more I talked to lawyers, the more I thought it's the system is designed in this jerky way. Mm-hmm. But the people are actually pretty good people yes. trying to make this system work. And so when I went to Australia, I discovered the same thing. You know, they had a very similar system where, you know, they're all based on English common law that goes back thousands of years. And so they were also doing really creative, cool things. And then I got invited to South Africa that same year, and I saw the same thing. And then I got invited to Europe. And so in 2016, the same editor came to me and said, I've been seeing, by this time there's social media, I've been seeing that you're doing a lot more international travel. Are you ready to update the book? And so that's, and by then we actually had a name for this movement that was called Integrative Law. And so I wrote Lawyers as Changemakers, which is the global integrative law movement. That one has like 111 people from around the world whose stories are told, and it's an expansion of the first book.
Oh, so that book already came out. I thought that book was all. Oh, has that come out yet?
It has come out. Yeah, yes. It came out at the end of 2016.
That okay. So I misunderstood because I knew Lawyers as Peacemakers was getting a reboot, but I thought Lawyers as Changemakers hadn't come out yet. So it was okay, unless you're rebooting that one too.
I am going to reboot that one.
Okay.
Because what's happened is, you know, it's been 15 years since Peacemakers, and one of the things I did in Peacemakers, I talked about. Multidisciplinary topics and like multi-level well-being. Mm-hmm. We actually had a different word we used. I can't remember what it is, but so before that, well-being was about whether you ate right and
yes,
exercised.
Very physical and very physical medical. Yeah.
And medical. And so so we actually like were pioneers. I had a contributor who helped me in this section. We were doing the multidisciplinary, like looking at our mental health, and we introduced meditation for lawyers and mm-hmm. all of, you know, ooh, all kinds that. Of stuff. And now it's actually the cool thing. Like they actually have a well-being institute, the Institute of Well-Being and Law, and this is actually Well-Being Week in law.
Wow. This
week.
Well, we're pretending like we knew. Of course we knew that. That's why we put the show this week.
That's right. I'm sure.
Happy Well-Being and Law Week. I will actually text my lawyer friends after this.
Yeah. And you know, they've discovered that well-being isn't just physical. You know, all these different yes. dimensions of well-being.
Now the psychosocial, spiritual, yes.
And so the ideas of 15 years ago are actually now the cool things. Mm. And so it was time to bring it back out. And when I published to the ABA, it was great for credibility, but they charged $75 for the book.
Yes, I remember we talked about how the books were kind of expensive. And so now you're doing the self-publishing route.
Right, and so I'll be able to charge like $20.
Okay, good.
And so more people will have it.
Oh, that'll be exciting.
But then beyond Lawyers as Changemakers, so that one came out. That also did well. They stopped paying attention to the numbers in the same way, but they told me that when they launched it at a conference, it was the best seller, like, that book sold more than all the other books I was selling combined.
Wow. I mean, I can see it. And I remember when we talked last time, the link, especially on the, well, both internally or nationally, but internationally, this connection of diplomacy and how people really connect well together. And so change makers and so many attorneys, right, or they go into that sort of diplomat world and how to address I mean, look, now we've got a lot going on with our international partners. And so being able to do change, but in a way that is peaceful, well, I would think. I mean, I would think there's so much overlapping into what's going on even today. So I could see why it would be so popular.
Well, you know, think about it. If you are told to do something, it immediately triggers a reaction. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, it's hell no.
Yes, I have learned that with my teenage daughters when they were teenagers. They're not. They're in their 20s now. Me, I'm such a people pleaser. If you tell me to do something, I'll be like, okay, youngest daughter, I mean, my siblings, okay, sure. I just want to make you happy. Tell me what to do, and it's fine. But no, a lot of people, it sets off that oppositional defiant disorder or whatever.
Whereas there's research that shows if you sit down and decide to do it together, And like, you know, in negotiations or whatever, and you set up your own, like, measures and, you know, success and all that kind of stuff, then people actually are more likely to comply and be happier and more satisfied.
They respond. Isn't there, I was thinking about all these, like, leadership and management stuff that I've read, and it can be done, I think, thoughtfully, and it can also be done in sort of a manipulative way. You know, when people are like, okay, I'm going to make them think it was their idea and if the intention is authentic and pure, but other times it's like, okay, we're going to talk it out because it's going to make it seem like it's their idea anyway, and then they'll have more buy-in. And so it has a much more I'll say the word manipulative, but you're not coming from that angle.
Right.
Or it's sort of like, no, let's authentically come to.
I actually have a group working on
the idea. Of course you do. Whatever it is, of course you do.
On exploring, like how do we define integrative law when that can happen? Like, there are people who say, oh, this is a cool thing to do, and I can make more money at it.
Yeah.
And so let me learn the process and tell everybody I'm doing that when I'm really just manipulating them.
That's what I was going for. It kind of works into the hustle, or at the end of the day, I want what I want, and this is how I'm going to get people to do what I want them to do, or what I think they should do.
And so that manipulation is not integrative law.
No.
And so how do we define integrative law to make it clear? And what we've come up with is an internal shift. It's a transformation that happens inside, and then it is expressed outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were a lot of people around the world who were having this internal shift, and then they were designing, like, for example, if you're an environmental lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So environmental law can be tree-hugging, loving nature, and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Or it can be how bad can you be and still get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the earth lawyers actually started, like, kind of going down the road of, you know, this is our home. This, you know, this is our planet, and all the beings on the planet are interconnected. You know, it's biologically true. It's spiritually true.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we treat Mother Nature in a way that is part of this ecosystem?
Yes, and I'm already thinking. And then there's a whole other approach where folks are not thinking that way.
They're like, not thinking that
way.
Hey,
we have a business to do. We would like to make money and meet needs. And then do they come up? I'm just guessing. So tell me, are they like, all right, how can we do what we want to do but not do harm? As opposed to, like, is that the other one?
Well, think about greenwashing, you know?
I've heard that term, but I don't know what
that
means.
So it looks very environmentally responsible and all that, but it's not.
Like packaging things literally in green and then saying this organic or eco-friendly,
right.
Or things like
not.
That. And you're like,
Yeah, you take an orange and you put it in a box and put it plastic around it and, you know, all that. That's, you know.
Okay.
You know, an orange has a nice package already.
So then do you sit them down and say, all right?
Well, see, we're not policing.
Yes.
But we're...
Those are different values and different approaches. Because I know when we talked last time and I had a question about you, your skill set is bringing together your people with different values.
Yes. And so I work with my clients on their values. I also work with lawyers on their values.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what is it you value most?
When we don't all have the same values.
And we don't all have the same values. And so that's where having that conversation, and I can hear, oh, Alicia, oh, I so admire your commitment to well-being and the way you do it and all that kind of stuff. I think that's really valuable for us working together. But I also, like, want to sleep in.
You know? Right. Yeah. Right. Or I want to make money, or right. I would like to, you know, it's anything. I think that's important. I remember from the last one talking about, even as you approach divorces, asking people to look in the future, 5 years in the future, where do you want to be? What's, and then kind of working from there. But I can see, let's just at least get on the table our values and where we're coming from, because if people are coming from completely different ways, they're going to just keep missing each other.
They're going to keep missing each other. And so,
and to be honest about those values, it's perfectly fine for people to say, look, I would like to make a good living. I would like to do what I do and support myself and my family. And so that's important to me. And someone else might say, well, I want to focus more on being connected to nature, and it doesn't have a financial aspect. You know, I don't know. I'm just trying to, well, I'll stop ranting for
but that is, yeah, that's the kind of work that I do in everything I do, whether it's working with lawyers and teaching them how to do that with their clients. But you have to do it for yourself first, or working with clients.
Coming to terms both as an attorney and as a person, what are your values? What's important to you? So that way, when the time comes, you can state it and
share it. It's a compass.
So there's one thing. So we've got a few minutes left, and we ran out of time last time, and I don't want to run out of time this time. And and you and I talked earlier today, and I want to talk about this concept of courage.
Well, and it's actually a great segue.
Oh, there we go. Let us segue to courage, Kim. What is that for you, and why did this keep coming up?
it's actually an inquiry I'm in. Hmm. Like, where does courage come from? Like, there are a lot of people who are being very courageous right now.
Yes.
And, you know, like where do we get that? And I think we get that being really clear about our values.
Right.
Like, if you're really clear that, like, let's use something from the news. Let's use that environmental lawyer.
Okay.
You know, if you're an earth lawyer and you're all about, we're going to take care of Mother Earth. Mm-hmm. And somebody comes to you and hire you and says, we want to dump as much of this toxic waste into the river as we can. Mm-hmm. And we want you to help us find a way to get away with it.
Okay.
Then you're going to say no.
Yeah, that's against your own.
That's against my values. Mm-hmm. No, I will not do that. Well, the rents do.
I was going to say.
Yes.
Well, no.
What's that phrase, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything?
Yes.
Is it kind of like that? Like, come in touch with what's important to you. And so, and then when there's a disconnect is where this issue of courage comes in. Because isn't, like, how well are you willing to take a courageous stand when it means something to you? Because I heard that recently, like, you can take a stand on stuff, but it really doesn't impact you. Courage is when you have something to lose.
Yeah.
Right? Or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. And
I'm messing up that quote.
So that some people define courage in ways like it's about, you know, bungee jumping or something like that. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's something.
Yes.
That's just fun.
Yeah. I told someone years ago, he called me a risk taker. And I said, I am not a risk taker. I just don't see that. And I said, I don't go bungee jumping. I'm not like a big skier. And he's like, no. That's physical risk taking. But you've taken new jobs that had unclear, you know, I keep taking jobs that don't have, I love jobs that don't have clear job descriptions. It's hard to do bad if there was not a clear description. I love unclear expectations because you can meet unclear expectations. But yeah, okay, so go on about this courage and this issue of, you know, what's risk.
Well, so when I took on being a digital nomad.
Oh, so many things in your life, no question. Risk taking, courage.
It wasn't like it wouldn't even feel like courage to me. It felt like integrity.
Right.
It's like, this is my mission. This is what I was made for in this world.
It wasn't hard.
It wasn't hard. And so I think that when we are really, really clear, it becomes less hard.
Oh, I think that it's a whole other topic. When parents, people say, you know, marriage is hard work or whatever. And that is true. It is. But sometimes or other things are really hard. I'm like, yes, but if it's so clear that this is what feels right, it doesn't feel hard or it doesn't feel like a risk because it feels like a risk to not do it.
Right.
Look, we're on a radio show. What are we doing on a radio show, Alicia? No. I mean, that's a risky thing for some people. But I'm like, this just seems so fun and interesting and whatever, I'm in. So sometimes it's that something else pops up and then you're kind of just going towards your, as you said, going with integrity. Like, it makes sense to go in this direction. Oh, now I'm rambling.
Did I tell you my public speaking story?
No, tell us. And it's good. We've got 4 minutes left. Tell us your public speaking story.
I was a shy person.
Really?
In the fourth grade, something happened with a teacher. And the message I came away with was that people won't like you if they know you're smart.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure that's not what she was trying to tell. To say. But that's what I came away with. And I didn't know how to be smart and still talk. how to be liked and still talk, because if people would find out I was smart. And so for years, like, I just shut down and shut down and shut down. When people, when teachers called on me, I would be so quiet that they didn't even know I was talking, and they stopped calling on me.
Because you knew the answer, but you didn't want people to not like you.
Right. And so I...
Interesting.
Through college and all that, but through law school, I sat in the front seat right under the professor so they wouldn't call on me, because when they went to call on somebody, they would look back into the into the back seats and all that kind of stuff. And so I never got called on in law school by design.
Oh, and interesting. So, because they thought, well, you're really into it. You're sitting in the front seat, so I'll call on someone behind.
And, I mean, usually there are like 100 people in the room. They didn't have time to call on everybody, and so I just got away with it. And so I would not, like, speak up about anything.
Interesting.
And I wrote a book for coaches on legal issues back in around 2000 with a co-author who was very comfortable being out in front of people, she said. And, you know, she was going to take care of all that front stuff, and I could just write. Oh, my dream come true. I love to write. I'll just write it all down, and then she can go tell people about it. And we actually looked at risk in this book about how much risk you're willing to take. And she said that she was not into risk at all.
Yeah.
And I was this big risk taker. And so it made our book so much better.
I love this.
So I got an invitation to speak at a conference. And I was going to sit on the sideline, and she was going to stand up in front of everybody. And, you know, everything's, like, completely, like, arranged and all that. We got there. She took one look. She says, there are 1,100 people here. She took 3 Xanax and checked out.
Oh, really?
I would have taken one, not 3. I would have taken one. Just calm me down.
She was literally gone. She did not even sit on the stage.
She's like, I can't do it. Too many people.
Too many people. And it was left to me.
Yes.
And that was when I dropped into my mission.
Yeah.
And I looked out.
Love it.
I looked out at those 1,100 people, and every one of them was looking at me wanting my message.
Right. Yes. And you have a message to share.
A beautiful different way. Right.
And so I stood on that stage, and I delivered our message. I had no prepared remarks, you know, like, all the stuff she was going to say was out of my head, because I, you know, I hadn't, you know, memorized anything. And people, years went by, and people would see me, and they would say, I remember you. You were in Las Vegas at that conference. I've never seen anybody own the room in the way
Whoa.
You did. And that was, like, such a huge breakthrough for me, because it became then about my message.
Yes.
And it didn't matter, like, you know, all that self-conscious stuff about, you know, how do I look, and, you know, did I wear the right thing, you know, all that kind of stuff. It just evaporated.
It's about your message and about connecting with people. All right, well, here's my quick segue, since we have 1 minute left. Tell people who may want to connect with you the best way to find you. Share websites, or can they go on Amazon? Like, how can they get more of Kim Wright?
jkimwright.com is my central site.
J, so it's the initial J, KIMWRIGHT.com, jkimwright.com.
And it's got my story. And if you look at on the phone, it doesn't have all of the links, but on the internet, it has all the links to all my sites.
Okay, I'll try to add that. When we get this posted, I'll go ahead and add the website. Anyway, I hate to wrap this up. Now it's like we need to have you back the third time. And listeners, you know, feel free to email if you have questions you want me to ask him for next time. We'll give it a few months, and then we'll bring her back once we know that we can start ordering peacemakers on Amazon or wherever we're going to order it. And you can already get changemakers now. But would love, listeners, for your insights. What would you like to talk more about? But we're so going to have you back. We'll fight with the other show, you know, how many times you can go back. But really, Kim Wright, thank you so much for coming back.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Yay. And listeners, we're going to transition off, but thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carrboro for hosting our show. Thank you, Orange County Department on Aging, for sponsoring our show. And we are so excited to be in our new studio and to come back to you soon next week. Thank you.